from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Blessed Sacrament, front and center. That's how Catholics in Madison, Wisconsin are making Christ's living presence clear. On Register Radio this week, Jeanette DeMello explores liturgical reforms in Wisconsin with Bishop Robert Morlino of Madison. Then Jeanette and Dominican brother Athanasius Murphy engage in a new front in evangelization, a video game aimed to draw players into the Passion Tide. Welcome to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm the producer of the show, Elena Rodriguez, sitting in for Tom Price. Our editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, Jeanette DeMello, will be leading the conversations. Thank you for joining us, Jeanette. Our first guest is Bishop Robert Morlino of the Diocese of Madison in Wisconsin. He has a doctorate in moral theology from the Gregorian University in Rome, and he specializes in fundamental moral theology and bioethics. He is here with us to talk about liturgical reforms in Wisconsin. Jeanette?
Bishop Morlino, it's great to have you on Register Radio this week.
It's wonderful to be here, Jeanette. Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course, Bishop. You know, every week as Catholics, we make the Eucharist a highlight of our week when we go to Sunday Mass. And now you are doing something in the Diocese of Madison that is really helping Catholics to understand that the Eucharist is front and center when we go to Mass. What's happening in the Madison Diocese?
Well, actually, Jeanette, when I came here about 13 years ago, 14 pushing 14, I mentioned that we had to move in a very deliberate way, in a patient way, but in a very deliberate way to make sure that our liturgical celebrations were as the Church wanted them to be, and especially very reverent.
Mm-hmm.
And because I am convinced, as I said in the article, that if the liturgy is not properly celebrated in a local church, well, then one can expect everything else to go wrong.
Sure.
We say that the liturgy is the summit and the source of our Christian life. Well, if that's true, then if the liturgy is not appropriately celebrated, well, then what about the rest of the Christian life?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I strongly believe that the liturgy is the source and the summit. So I mentioned that we would be addressing a number of things with the liturgy as the years go on, and particularly with regard to the placement of the tabernacle. And I've been talking about that for almost 14 years now.
Sure.
And explaining and so on. And many, many of the churches have placed the tabernacle back in the center on an axis with the main altar, with the prominence and the beauty that is appropriate. But there are some who haven't, for a variety of reasons, and many of them are considerable reasons. So I just thought, now that the movement is well underway, I would place a deadline finally.
Mm-hmm.
And the deadline is 1918. So in fact, they will have had 16 years plus.
Sure.
To think about this.
Sure.
So no one, I don't think anyone can say that I moved in haste without catechesis.
Sure. So in 2018, all of the churches in the Madison Diocese should have the tabernacle placed front and center, that is really directly behind the altar,
right,
in the sanctuary. And
right.
the reason for this change, as you mentioned, is that the Eucharist is the source and summit. How do you think the catechesis has gone?
Well, I think the catechesis has gone well, particularly because Eucharistic adoration has increased dramatically,
mm-hmm,
over the past 13 years. And when people taste the beauty and the richness of Eucharistic adoration, they begin to see the sacredness of the Eucharist. As people enter in more and more to the beauty of Eucharistic adoration, they seek greater reverence toward the Eucharist because they appreciate the presence of Christ who is really there more deeply.
Right.
And so many of them will give themselves more and more to Eucharistic adoration in terms of time, and any number of them have gone back to receiving communion on the tongue as a way that is clearly more reverent. Now, you know, I don't force that in any way, but there's no question that it is more reverent, and this is the effect that Eucharistic adoration has. So the ability now to move in this direction is a grace from God, really. It's the fruit of those many years of increased Eucharistic adoration.
Yeah. You know, it's so true that Eucharistic adoration does change you, and I have a really cute little story that happened last week. Every week I have the opportunity to take my son to daily Mass a couple times a week. My son's only two. And right at the cathedral where we attend Mass, daily Mass, they have benediction just immediately before Mass, and we walked in right as benediction was happening, and I knelt down, and my son was standing on the pew there with me, and he just looked up, and he said, "God!" He saw the monstrance, and here at 2 years old, he knew that that was God, and and it's because we are there every week, you know, seeing the Eucharistic Lord elevated and blessing us. And so it's true that when you see this time and time again, you can gain a true understanding of where Christ should be in our lives and where the Eucharist should be. So I know from watching and from hearing from the mouths of babes exactly what you're talking about.
That's
here.
That's a wonderful story.
Yes, and, you know, I do want to get into some of the history as to why the tabernacles were not front and center. You know, my church has it front and center now, but I do remember growing up, and it was the Eucharistic, the tabernacle was there in a side chapel. Why do we need to go back and put it into the center? What has happened in these years?
Well, usually the reasons for placing the Eucharist in a side chapel in a normal parish church did not hold a great deal of water, usually. Now, in huge cathedrals, in the basilicas in Rome, which are really part-time used as museums by people and tour guides and others, it's necessary to have a spot removed so that people who want to be quiet can pray and adore the Blessed Sacrament.
Sure.
That makes perfect sense. Or, for example, at the National Shrine down in Washington, D.C. Makes perfect sense. But in your ordinary parish church, people should come into that church, and they should immediately look up, see the tabernacle, genuflect, and say to themselves, "This is God's house."
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if people do that, then the reverence that's going to fill their presence in God's house is going to be all the more deep. The idea that, which was promoted after the council, that somehow the presence of Christ in the tabernacle is static, and the presence of the Christ in the Eucharistic offering of the Mass is dynamic, has no theological basis whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
There's one presence of Christ in the Eucharist, body and blood, soul and divinity. And you can't call the presence in the tabernacle static, because God is always fully in act. He's always fully in the act of loving, of giving gifts, seen and unseen, that cascade down upon us from heaven. God is fully in act in the tabernacle and in the Eucharist. And so one can't say, well, this presence is static and this is dynamic. And some even went so far as to say that the tabernacle in the center was a distraction from the Mass. And I have to admit to have really been frustrated by that, because the tabernacle was a distraction, but then if someone placed the mother of all Advent wreaths, hung it over the altar, and it was huge, and there it was, that was no distraction.
Sure.
But the tabernacle was. Or if someone placed a leader of song or a musical group very close to the altar, that was not a distraction.
Right.
But the
point's
tabernacle
well made.
Was.
Right.
So, unfortunately, that kind of approach that led to the wholesale misplacement of tabernacles at the time. I mean, people acted in good faith. People acted in good faith. But an unfortunate theology was communicated, which did not promote reverence and adoration. And those are the fundamental attitudes that are necessary for celebrating Mass.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Bishop Robert Morlino of the Madison Diocese, and we are talking about an article that ran in the National Catholic Register called Blessed Sacrament, Front and Center, God's Living Presence Clear in Madison Churches. And this is Bishop Morlino explaining why the churches in Madison are now moving the tabernacles back to the center of the sanctuary. And Bishop Morlino, there are other liturgical changes that you would like to see happen or that are even in the works. Maybe they don't have deadlines like this one, but what are some of the other changes you'd like to see happen?
Well, in due time, for example, I would like to see, as we've heard recently from Cardinal Sara in Rome, I would like to see Mass said celebrated ad orientem, that is, where the people stand facing in the same direction as the priest, facing the east, the place of the rising sun, the place from which Christ will come in his glory at the end of history. And we all stand there looking toward the east, waiting for him to come. I think that's a beautiful symbolic gesture. And it enables the people to be more prayerful and less kind of concerned with what's going directly around them. I mean, if we're looking away from ourselves, if we're looking toward the future coming of Christ and the fullness of his glory, that seems to me to be the most appropriate posture. But that will come slowly because Pope Emeritus Benedict himself has said that it's going to take time to prepare people
sure.
to be receptive of that kind of an approach, simply not because they're against it, but they don't understand it. And there will be those who will immediately say the priest is turning his back on the people and we're going backwards. We have to be in a situation where people at large would be more open. And, of course, the younger generation would. It amazes me that younger people are much more comfortable, if you will, with Mass ad orientem than other people might be. And
sure.
that even is the case when the Mass ad orientem happens to be the traditional Latin Mass.
Sure. Sure.
Most of the people who go there are youngish with large families.
Right, right. And there's no history there that distorts their perception either. So I think this effort at catechesis, Bishop Morlino, is welcomed. The Register is happy to cover it, and we thank you so much for being with us on Register Radio.
Well, thank you so much, Jeanette, and I certainly wish you and yours every blessing of Holy Week and Easter.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Bishop Robert Morlino of the Diocese of Madison in Wisconsin, and thanks to Jeanette DiMello as well. When we return, do you know of someone who is into gaming? How about a video game that draws players into the Passion Tide? Register Radio continues in a moment on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Elena Rodriguez. Our next guest is Brother Athanasius Murphy, a Dominican friar and deacon studying for the priesthood in Washington, D.C. at the Dominican House of Studies. He joins us to talk about a video game he built to draw players into the Passion Tide. Jeanette?
Brother Athanasius, you know, we're here to talk about video games, and I have to say, I don't talk about video games too often, except perhaps to nag my husband when he's played for too long. So this is a very interesting topic for Register Radio. You've been a part of a team that created a video game called Passion Tide, the video game. And what is this all about? What is Passion Tide, the video game?
So, really, Jeanette, Passion Tide, the video game, is a free web game that anyone can play online. It's only one level long, and its theme is a retro-style game based upon, like, a Super Mario Brothers system of working. And really, you just take your hero, and he's a Dominican friar, and he navigates through Washington, D.C. to make his way to St. Dominic's Church.
What is he making his way to St. Dominic's for? Why have the Dominicans created this this video game? It's an odd endeavor.
Yes, it's true. It is. So the whole purpose of the game is to promote an event at St. Dominic's Church called Passion Tide. So Passion Tide is just this candlelit prayer service that we have once a year. The second annual time was this year. And it's a prayer service that's supposed to prepare us for the time of Holy Week. That's the point of Passion Tide.
And, of course, Passion Tide started, I think your vigil was March 12th, correct?
That's right. It was March 12th this year.
Okay. So March 12th began the two-week period right before Easter. And during this period of time, we enter into almost a deeper element of Lent, a deeper element of our sacrifice. Tell us what happened at the vigil on March 12th.
So the vigil itself, this March 12th, was a night set afire by the gift of the cross, which uplifts our desire for his ridding our loss. It was a beautiful experience for people to gather in this old Gothic church, surrounded by hundreds, if not thousands, of candles with the lights off, and just to experience different readings from the Old Testament that speak about the cross. Our theme this year was the cross and the Torah. How the cross is the tree of life, how the cross is the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus, and how the cross is the source of all the grace that flows from the pierced side of our Lord. All these elements were present during the nights with some chant and polyphony to prepare people for Holy Week.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, during after this kind of vigil, usually the statues in a church are covered in purple, and you can really see in the church a visible change until Easter. So it's a beautiful symbol of what we do in this journey towards Easter in these weeks. Now, obviously, you decided to have a very unique way of drawing people into Passion Tide this year. The Register, and this is Register Radio, I'm Jeanette DeMello talking to Dominican brother Athanasius Murphy. And the Register covered this story of how Passion Tide, the game, came to be. The news story that we have is called New Front for the New Evangelization, Dominican Friars Launch Lenten Video Game, written by Stephen Beale. And this story tells us that you created this video game as a tool of evangelization. How did it work? I mean, did it actually pique people's interest in the Passion Tide?
So, as a matter of fact, Jeanette, it did. A number of people, there were hundreds of people who came to the Passion Tide prayer vigil, some of whom had never been to St. Dominic's Church before, so it drew a very wide crowd. Some testimony I heard is that there were some people who heard about this game even as far as the northeast of the U.S., so in Connecticut, and drove mm-hmm. 5 hours to come to Passion Tide in Washington, D.C. at St. Dominic.
Really?
Yes, and they actually heard about this through the video game, and it surpassed the event, they said. It surpassed all of their expectations, anything they were expecting for a prayer vigil like this.
That's wonderful. Do you know how many people actually played the game?
So since our release of it on Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent, thousands of people have played from all over the world.
And is it still possible to play it? How can people play?
Oh, the simplest way would just be to go into any internet search browser and just put in their Passion Tide game or Passion Tide video game, and it should come up right away.
Did you get actual feedback on the game itself? What were people saying?
The first initial days, you get the responses, Jeanette, that you think anyone would to a post that says, here's a video game some Dominican friars made. They were saying, what? Could you say that again? So some people were just amused by it. Other people were delighted by it. There was a lot of different coverage. Some local stations, news stations in Washington ended up covering the story because they thought it was such a peak of interest for people.
And okay, so are you a gamer? Was this your idea? Whose idea was it? It had to come from a gamer.
So you would think so. The way it actually originated is that, I mean, on my end, I love St. Dominic's Church. It's the one Dominican parish that we have in Washington, D.C. And I really just wanted to open up the doors of this beautiful church and the mm-hmm. Dominican traditions we have of preaching and chanting to everybody who could come. And so another brother had teased me last year and said, you're doing everything that you possibly could to, promote this. You're writing handwritten invitations. You're speaking to people word of mouth. You're just getting the word out there. Why don't you just try making a video game if you're going to do all this? And it was a joke at first, but we actually sat down and said, well, this is possible. Why don't we give it a shot?
Right, right. And, it seems to me when I look at pictures of the crew that helped put this together, you're millennials, and so you're really aiming to reach your generation. And that's a beautiful task, and probably a challenging task. Do you think you'll do more of this kind of thing?
Oh, well, I'd have to think about that long and hard, Jeanette. Given the skills that we had and the size of our team, it was months of slow progress to come up with this. And, I mean, it's certainly rewarding. People love it. But perhaps I'll hand over the task of evangelization through gaming to more professionals.
I understand. Now, it is a very special year for Dominicans. It's the 800th anniversary of the founding of the Dominican Order. What a beautiful thing. As we close, I mean, we just got to have a couple of minutes left. Can you tell us your own story, how you were drawn to be a Dominican?
Oh, certainly, Jeanette. So I attended the college run by the Dominican Friars in Northeast United States, Providence College in Rhode Island. I attended there for 4 years. I had an undergraduate in humanities. And while I was there, I didn't have, initially an intention to become a Dominican friar or a religious or even a Catholic priest. But somewhere towards the beginning of my junior year, I started thinking about, the beauty of the religious life, the call to the priesthood, and how satisfying and happy a life a young man can have living as a Dominican friar. I was surrounded by these Dominicans who were living happy lives, mm-hmm. and I just asked God for the grace, to continue to increase this desire in me. And by the end of my time in college, I was applying to the order.
And you are a deacon now, do I understand correctly?
That's correct, Jeanette, yes.
And when will you be ordained?
So myself and 10 other Dominican deacons, whom I live with at St. Dominic's in Washington, D.C., will be ordained to the priesthood on May 21st of this year at the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception.
What a beautiful year to have your ordination. Are there any other special celebrations going on during the 800th anniversary?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the Dominican Order is having all these different meetings and different events that one can go to so that you can learn about the history of the order, its progress throughout its 800 years of existence, its growth in different countries. Different countries are doing different things.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, Brother Athanasius, thank you so much for being with us to talk about this video game, for showing your desire to bring the passion of Christ to so many in such a unique way. It's truly a pleasure to see that kind of work being done, and I actually hope you find someone to produce the next video for the Dominicans, because I think it's a great way to evangelize.
Thank you very much, Jeanette.
And thank you both, Brother Athanasius Murphy and Jeanette DeMello. You can read more about this trailblazing video game on ncregister.com. Hey, and do you know of anyone who might want to hear Register Radio? Point them to ncregister.com and click on the radio tab to listen, or you can even download the show. All Register Radio shows are archived there. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello, Bishop Robert Morlino, Brother Athanasius Murphy, Tom Price, and all of us here at the Register and at EWTN Radio, thank you for joining us. This is Elena Rodriguez, and we will be here again next week for more of Register Radio.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.